8 minutes past seven on a Sunday morning. And speaking of records, have a listen to these tunes and just see if you can spot what the connection is.
The land don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your whole road is rapidly
there. The special AKAs, Free Nelson Mandela, Bob Dylan's The Times They Are A-Changing, Joan Baez's We Shall Overcome, and of course John Lennon's Give Peace A Chance. Now they're all songs which feature in a top 10 list of protest songs compiled by my next guest. Greg Neil is an honorary fellow visiting at York University and is also editor of the magazine Resurgence and The Ecologist. He's been looking into popular songs with an ethical twist, in which song and songwriters would hope change the world. Did they? Let's speak to Greg Neil. He joins us live on the programme. Good morning to you, Greg.
Good morning, Jonathan.
So we're talking about protest songs then, Greg. What's your fascination with them?
Well, it's started because the Resurgence and Ecologist magazine has just celebrated its 50th birthday. It was founded by a cleric who was a strong anti-war campaigner, John Papworth, in 1966. So we were looking at various ways in which we could mark the occasion. And at the same time, I went along to the Victoria and Albert Museum in London, where they have a fascinating exhibition on at the moment called You Say You Want a Revolution, Records and Rebels, 1966-1970, which looks at the history of the period from the point of view of the music that was being made at the time. And, of course, quite a lot of the music at the time was ephemeral and transient, like pop music normally is. But a fair bit was actually rather more significant in terms of it was addressing some of the issues of the time. So the anti-war movement in the United States, for example, was inspiring songs. And of course, it drew on a wider tradition of protest song, both in America, in Britain, and in the wider world. And that's got me thinking that we sometimes say that, you know, protest songs don't make any difference whatsoever. But what if they did? What if they even merely summed up an era? So my colleagues and I at the Resurgence of the Ecologist magazine sat down and we argued over it and we came up with a list of some of the songs which we thought certainly should not be forgotten.
Can I pick a bone with you? Is that okay?
Please do.
Because you don't have Creedence Clearwater Revival's Fortunate Son on there. Which more than anything else is just an amazing song with the show displaying the power of the voice of John Fogerty from the band. Was there any chance of including that in the list?
Oh, I think if we extended it to the top 30, you'd have to put it in. I mean, for a magazine which has articles about peace and non-violence and so on, we nearly came to blows when it came to trying
to finalize
our choice. And of course, there are many songs. particularly, of course, if you extend the period. I mean, we were initially just looking at the mid to late 60s, 66 to 1970, are the dates covered by the Victoria and Albert Museum. But if you really wanted to look at popular song, you would have to go, for example, into the 1950s and 60s, when the civil rights movement in America really was at its height. Inspired, well, you've played the Joan Baez recording of We Shall Overcome, which, of course, dates back to rather earlier than the 60s. But think about people like Pete Seeger, people like Woody Guthrie, who in the 1940s wrote the extraordinary movement song, you know, This Land Is Your Land, This Land Is My Land, and, you know, really symbolised the idea of the dispossessed, a real protest song which has got, I think, perhaps still has resonance today.
Do you
if
think
you went
that,
back even further... I'm sorry.
Sorry, Greg. Do you think they still have the capacity? I mean, when we talk about incredibly tumultuous times, and you know, we talk about the civil rights movement in America and, the, you know, Bob Dylan summing that up, or we talk about the anti-Vietnam movement, and it seems to me like those songs had more prominence or were listened to more than a protest song would have today.
Well, I think that's probably true, until you consider that in some ways those issues were so stark. Bob Dylan, for example, wrote A Hard Rain in 1962-63, and many people thought, well, that's a warning of the potential, you know, of nuclear fallout. This is a song which is addressing a real existential issue here. Some people might say, well, today music doesn't address issues like that anymore. It's all about, you know, the dance floor and the right number of beats per minute and so on. But I still think that, you know, were the issues to arise, you would get them. And let's also realise that we were constrained in our list to songs which had achieved some kind of popular success. They had made the charts or in some way. If you go around the world today, in many different cultures, protest music, protest songs are still being written and are still being performed. But that's in societies where the act of, you know, singing a protest song can, you know, put the singer at great risk. Look at the Rhyme Musicians of Algeria, for example, in a society where to voice dissent in song can be, you know, a very dangerous occupation. And there are other parts of the world as well where this is true.
And I just wonder, finally, if also, because the trends of the time change. You know, back in the 60s, there was a huge anti-war movement. It was flower power and psychedelia. In the 80s, you had people like Billy Bragg singing, and, you know, he was making it into the top 20, top 10, and there was because of a big socialist movement. Now I just wonder if there is a time where people have the appetite for it, because it's just not as trendy anymore to listen to protest songs.
Well, I think that it's also true that in some cases it's become harder to identify a topic without sounding, you know, preachy and so on.
Yeah, yeah.
And within the music business, you know, you're warned, you know, to keep away from, you know, that kind of topic. Whereas in fact, the reality too, I think that if the song is strong enough, and it also addresses an issue, it can also transcend the genre of being merely a protest song, if you want to talk in those terms, to actually have, you know, much wider, possibly even universal appeal. I mean, it's also we think that, you know, anti-war sentiment was perhaps constrained to the 1960s and the era of Vietnam, but one of the most beautiful songs, I think, that actually got into the charts was 1982 Shipbuilding, written by, you know, Elvis Costello and performed by Robert Wyatt, which was a very moving, elegiac reflection on what going to war really means, written from a very, very thoughtful point of view. And it shows that, you know, if the issues are serious enough, they can attract serious writers and serious performers.
Yeah, Robert Wyatt's version of that is one of the most beautiful things you can ever possibly hear. Greg, thank you so much for your time today. It's been absolutely fascinating to talk to you.
A great pleasure, Jonathan.